I'm ready for the end of the world with our mudslide.
Right. I think we're ready.
Yeah. These are delicious mudslides.
Oh my gosh. We had this idea a couple weeks ago, and now that I have created it, I think it's a winner.
It is a winner. L'chaim.
L'chaim.
I'm Jessica.
And I'm Yonit.
Welcome to the Kiddush Book Club. Yeah, this is a very boozy shake.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't finished it yet. I do have the drive home, so I'm going to try and moderate my
We have a habit of not measuring when we make cocktails.
You know, it's kind of on purpose. Let's be clear. Like, this is how I cook, which is why baking, like, I'm more particular when I bake. But when I'm cooking, it's like, I'll just throw some more in there.
Yeah.
Three times. In fact, I told someone, I was like, that salad dressing needs more garlic. And she's like, I don't even know how much you put in there, but whatever you put in is not enough.
More garlic exactly. For everybody. See, I've only been drinking this for like 3 minutes and
You're already talking apart.
I'm sure. Yeah. It's already, I'm in pirate mode with my mudslide. I love a good mudslide. I do. Normally it's what my husband drinks while I'm ordering something manly. And then he orders a mudslide and they bring it to me. And I'm like, no, that's for my husband.
Right. Right.
The chocolate martini is for my husband.
You know what? Let's be clear though. The amount of alcohol in here is more than a beer.
I'm making everyone cocktails for Mishloach Manot.
That's going to be amazing.
It's going to go well. I'm going to measure. I don't know how I'm going to measure. Okay. I feel like there's ways that bartenders do that, but I am not a bartender.
If only you knew one.
If only I knew one. Oh, wait. It is the end of the world, Yoni.
Oh, right. So I was at Target today, and not only was there no hand sanitizer, there was no toilet paper. I have plenty of both because I use Subscribe and Save. And,
me too.
You know, I make sure I have enough Clorox wipes to wipe down, like, many houses worth of places. So I'm fine, but I did notice that the shelves were completely empty. So in light of that, let's talk post-apocalyptic books.
Oh yeah. First of all, she's right though. Get yourself an Amazon subscription for toilet paper because like then it doesn't just like have to wait for everyone to jack up prices and compete. It just shows up at your house.
Yeah. And you know, we were talking about like, it's unfortunate that there are people who now can't get supplies they need because other people are like, I must hoard them.
For the possibility of, because I was out today and a woman actually genuinely was talking to someone else. Why do people need toilet paper so much? And I'm like, because they might be quarantined. Like,
right.
They might be stuck in their house and unable to go to the grocery store.
Right. Right.
Okay.
And you know what? I tried to do a delivery and all the deliveries are offset by a day or two. Like everything's slammed. Everything's taking a bit longer than normal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I did. So I did run out of toilet. So here's how I discovered I was out of toilet paper.
Okay.
Literally, I hate graphic. I was in need.
Okay.
And there was no toilet paper.
Oh no.
Not just in the bathroom I was in, but in the entire house.
That's terrible.
So, right. So I never, ever wanted that to happen again. So I was like, now I am very particular to make sure we always have a backup supply.
That is a terrible story.
It was pretty bad. I was like, this is.
And there was no one nearby to spare a square.
Of course not. Of course not. I'm in my own home. In the public restroom, you could be like, help.
My younger sister approached. She's like, we all just need to get bidets.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, so if there's an emergency, that's probably a great option.
We all need to own it. Like, I don't know why we're not on this European thing of having bidets.
I've heard they're amazing.
Destroying the earth this way.
Right.
You know, we're still Seattle people, and yet we're still all out there. Like, everyone's doing single-use plastic again.
So there is, on topic.
Yeah.
Unusual for us. I understand.
Yeah.
There was a book when I was a kid that I loved called The Motel of Mysteries. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
So what happens is that the world is destroyed because it is completely covered in junk mail and the civilization is destroyed.
Like in WALL-E.
Yes. And which specifically junk mail. So then what the book is written by is by anthropologists some many years in the future who are excavating and trying to figure out what society was like before it was destroyed by junk mail.
But based on junk mail.
But no, not just junk mail, but like, so they find a hotel room, the Motel of Mysteries, and they're like, you know, so they show a strip and they're like, these were altars to their gods. And it's like a bunch of neon signs for different like restaurants and stuff because like they don't know.
Yeah.
And then in the motel, they're like, he was praying at another altar. And it's like there's a skeleton in front of a TV.
Oh my gosh.
And then they're like, and then there was a porcelain one. And then like, you know, like they just don't know what any of the things are.
Because first of all, there's this desire in like, to even now when you look at archaeologists, right, a good archaeologist doesn't have a question. They are just looking for whatever information comes out and fitting it into the pre-existing puzzle or saying, we got to throw the whole puzzle out and start over, yeah. Right? A bad archaeologist is like those documentaries that you see sometimes on History Channel where they're like, aliens. Oh, yeah, we went to go find proof for aliens and we sort of found it. I'm like, well, no, you didn't, because if you sort of found it, you didn't find it. And right. also you went looking for it,
right,
which
right,
is not right, the right, same right. thing or as they, finding it.
Or how they only recently discovered that half of the Vikings were women. Like, I don't know how they missed that in the first
go. Because they weren't looking to confirm exactly. it.
They didn't want
it's confirmation
women.
Bias. Yeah. And I think that that would be an interesting take is that you're saying the Motel of Mysteries?
Yes.
Is like confirmation bias based on whatever their future society was.
They assumed
was.
That we were primitive and this and that. So everything they ascribed to that it's primitive
so
nature.
Fascinating. So the book I'm reading now, Starglass, which I've mentioned mm-hmm. before, I finished reading book one. Mm-hmm. Now I'm reading book two. I'm disappointed to discover it's only two books and then a series of short stories about when the apocalypse happened,
ooh.
Which is, okay, so apparently, I'm not going to say exactly what happened to Earth, but Earth has become uninhabitable,
okay.
and they send out a ship, multiple ships, to be honest, to try to locate other planets that will be habitable, and they go in different directions. One ship has been created by, like, a secular Jewish kind of a federation kind of a group,
mm-hmm.
And they try to make sure over like 60 to 70% of the people on the ship are Jewish. They will establish like a Jewish ship basically, mm. but it's not an observant one. They just yeah. are trying to kind of keep their people together.
Yeah.
And they take off and now it's 500 years later and they're arriving at their new planet, which they've decided to name in advance of arriving to it, Zahava,
okay.
like the land of gold. So what's crazy, okay, so here's what's crazy is 500 years have passed without basically without religion because they've only brought people on the ship who aren't observant.
Yeah.
And they've said to them, here's a regimented list of rules. So nobody thinks of the rules that they have as religious rules. They think of them as ship rules, right? And it's been corrupted so much over time that every time you're told that it's your duty to do something, you're told it's a mitzvah. Even if it's not a mitzvah, it's
that's
a mitzvah.
That's legit how everything works though.
Yes. It's
someone says, go pick up your socks. It's a mitzvah. And we're like, nah.
Right. It's not. Well, the ship says that that's your job. And then, you know, you must find a partner by a certain age and that's your bashir. Well, they don't actually define bashir. They don't know what it means. They just assume you have to partner up and they have no idea how things used to work. They have no idea that what tikkun olam used to mean. That's now they just think it means reaching their planet. Mm-hmm. Like they don't know that it meant fixing the planet, fixing the world. Now they think it means reaching it. And so this idea that like confirmation bias, when they find out that there used to be things called the Torah and there used to be, it's Jews in space. It's Jews in space. I've been wanting one. I found
Jews
one.
Jews in space.
Space.
I'm excited.
It's really good. I'm on book two.
Ooh, look at you. Okay, fine. I need book one. I read one yep. that was similar. It was basically, it's Jane Eyre in space.
Yeah.
But it was called, I always get the title.
Oh, wait, let me give the title again for mine so people have it. Starglass yep. by Phoebe North, Jewish author. Jewish Jews in Space. YA, but I mean, this is your next Divergent series, people. Your next Hunger Games. Starglass, jump in. It's worth it. And you, while you're searching your Goodreads.
I'm aching because I never remember the name of this book and it's driving me crazy. I just
the Jane Eyre in Space book?
I just keep calling it Jane Eyre in Space. So I'm actually
is it Jane
Google.
Eyre in Space or Jane Austen in Space? Like,
no,
is
Jane
she
Eyre
walking
in space.
The red moors overlooking for the three moons?
So what happens is that Earth becomes uninhabitable.
Of course.
And, oh, Brightly Burning. Oh, thank you. It's by Alexa Don. And so I enjoyed it immensely because so the Earth is uninhabitable and mm-hmm. they are now a series of spaceships we're holding all of humanity circling the Earth and some circling the moon. And there's a girl on there who, you know, under circumstances has been orphaned and has moved to the care of her aunt who didn't take care of her and then shifted her off to a lower class ship from the aristocracy ship where she was. Now she's on the ship where they grow the crops and whatnot to feed the aristocratic ships.
She's been demoted.
And then she applies and gets a nanny ship on on a ship called my brain went completely.
Heathcliff?
No, that's the captain of the ship. The name of the ship is called something else. Anyway, so it's got little nuggets of Jane Eyre just like
it's a retelling.
Drizzled in a lovely way. Hugo is the main character and Stella. And it's really, it's fun to read. And the whole idea is that like, there's a class warfare. There's, you know, different ideas. There are people who like want to return to Earth who think that they're being lied to and that the Earth is really habitable by now.
Yeah.
There's some who don't. And then there's like, you know, this whole thing. And the same thing happens where she, now she's on this ship and she keeps hearing like weird noises at night. And someone sets Hugo's room on fire.
Oh,
and,
well.
Like, really, like.
Fire on a ship? That could be very dangerous.
So, it was such a good scene. Anyway, I enjoyed it immensely.
Very dangerous.
And even if you know the story of Jane Eyre, there's still mysteries to be discovered in this book.
I love that someone said, what if Earth became uninhabitable and people are in spaceships? But the story of Jane Eyre could happen.
Yeah, it could.
It could.
Yeah.
You never know. There's always a creepy, mysterious guy who you like, who's gaslighting you, and it turns out he's got a wife that he's keeping somewhere. There's always some woman who was born well and then lost it all and then becomes a nanny.
Yep.
Anywhere you go. I mean, come on. Who hasn't met those people?
It could happen in a post-apocalyptic future.
A post-apocalyptic future could happen now. I mean, come on.
No, 100%.
I mean, 100%. Do you read the Am I the Asshole?
Oh, it's my favorite. I find it very cathartic.
Okay. It's a thread on Reddit, right?
Yeah.
And then someone retweets it, which is where I see it. Where do you see it on Twitter?
That's also, I actually do read Reddit occasionally. So that's one of my subreddits. But I have been lately only seeing it on Twitter because I find that the people on Twitter who respond are slightly more normal demographic than the people who respond on Reddit.
Are the people who respond on Reddit less likely to find that the person? Wait, let's explain. AITA, Am I the Asshole, is where someone, the original poster, the OP, writes a story of something
describes
that happened.
Describes the situation. Yeah. Here's what happened. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong?
Am I wrong? And sometimes,
and
you know.
And dear listener.
Yeah. They're usually
wrong.
Well, sometimes,
but not always.
Sometimes it's like, you know.
The man is like, I humiliated someone in public and then stole money. But but I was within my right. And the woman's like, so my boyfriend got really angry and didn't misinterpreted the whole thing and screamed and threw me out of the house. And then I told his mom, but like, am I wrong there? And we're like.
Or the guy whose parents are notorious for ruining all of his life experiences. So he lied to them about where his honeymoon was going to be.
Oh, yeah. That was
and then they showed up to the hotel where he told them that he would be and he found out. And
they were
like,
so mad at him.
Because he's like, am I the asshole for telling my parents the wrong place for my honeymoon? And then they got on a plane to Aruba and I wasn't there. I'm like, no, you're not. You did the right thing here. They would have shown up on your honeymoon.
Yes, they would have. And nobody wants that.
So there's always guys on there that I'm like, is this fake?
Or there's the one who's like, my husband's mother died in childbirth, so now that I'm pregnant, they keep making me prepare as if I'm going to die.
Yes. The husband
and
was mad that
her
closet wasn't empty.
I refuse to empty my belongings and record a video about my imminent death. Am I in the wrong? And everyone's like, can we help rescue you? Can you run away, please?
Your father-in-law is preparing for your death.
I don't know if they're fake. And sometimes...
Okay, so the one that I saw like today or yesterday was pretty real. It was a guy who's in a creative writing course. Did you see?
And he
writes about himself that he has a quote, an infinity for writing. Not affinity, infinity.
No. He has been writing dialogue since first grade.
Yes, at an eighth grade level. Yeah. And he writes basically that he's Hemingway. First of all, Hemingway ain't great. But okay.
He was drunk a lot though.
Hemingway was drunk a lot. And I'm not going to say Hemingway was bad. I'm just saying like, don't nowadays go, you know who was the best? Hemingway.
Dead white dude? What?
Oh. Right. He knew how to make sentences short, right?
Yeah.
And how to come up with a captivating story. But he's not the be-all and end-all of authors. Mm-hmm. So if a guy – and it's a red flag when someone's like, I'm the next Hemingway.
You know what? There were so many red flags. This guy was having a parade.
He basically wrote a 59-page chapter and asked the entire class to read it, which they're supposed to do before a critique.
Right.
Then they were all – you could tell the other people were giving him like –
the hottest girl in class liked it. And I was like, okay, we don't describe people that way. We're adults.
Right. We're adults. The hottest girl in the creative writing group liked it. He says he's a college graduate. So hottest girl liked it. But this other guy, a sporty jock who writes poetry. I'm like, that's what? A sporty jock who writes poetry basically told me that it was like too much sexual descriptions and the sentences were meandering and it made no sense. And meanwhile, they just had to listen to him read 59 pages. Like,
so I'll tell you that I was watching, did you watch Four Weddings and the Funeral, the TV series?
No, just the original.
Okay. So the TV series I've been watching is quite good. And one of the characters has written a novel and all of his friends have pretended to read it.
That sounds like life.
And
if you're going to give people that you are friends with in real life your novel to read, they're not going to read it. They're not going to read it. Like my sister, Francine, is like the exception. I was shocked she actually read what I was doing. I was like, is this real? Like you're actually reading my work?
So I almost don't want people
you know,
I know
don't
to read
your
read
work. No, you should give it to strangers. Always. Because first of all, they'll read it. Yeah. I have multiple strangers' work manuscripts in my inbox. I'm reading all of them.
Yeah. So you want, because they feel, So here's the thing. They feel like they can give you honest feedback because mm-hmm. there's not a, oh, I don't want to hurt your feelings.
Right.
Or it's also like, I'm going to give you a lot of benefit of the doubt because yeah. I know you and I know what you mean. But you know what? I'm not your reader. I'm not the millions of people who are going to read in your novel. They're not going to know you and give you the benefit of the doubt. You need someone who's going to read it and be like, so I'm sure you didn't mean it this way, but it's kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Like it comes off clunky or it comes off like this. Or I
gave someone a critique like that once that was like, you probably didn't mean it this way, but, and the person, I'm not going to say man or woman. It's probably not you. If you're listening and you think it's you, it's not you. I promise. The person who I'm talking about does not listen to the show. this person genuinely was like, I read what, like a few pages. And this person was like, what do you mean? That's how women talk. I'm like, no, women don't talk like that. I thought I was reading a very, very, very naughty, nasty man. And he goes to me, well, she's a lesbian. I go, I think you have a fundamental misunderstanding of lesbians. If you think that lesbians talk like horrible, misogynistic men from like Archie Bunker era.
I will say that men write women do love that.
Men write women love that. So he couldn't be published. I find it revealed it's a he. It's always a he. Always a but he. Like, it was hard because I was like, listen, this is not a thing. And the person's response was, well, yeah, it is. It's the, okay. A good example. The other day on Twitter was a day called Pit Mad. Mm-hmm. And every time there's a pitch party online, when people write their pitches, I've mentioned on the show before, somebody pitches a Jew Nazi romance. You saw it, right?
I'll tell you that this has happened so many times.
Yeah.
That our beloved romance writers that we follow on Twitter.
Yeah.
Of which they're like, I don't want to leave anyone out, but no, we follow several.
Many. Yeah.
But multiple ones of them have been like, it is not considered a romance yeah. if, and specifically they mentioned Nazi and Jew.
Slave
owner and master.
Slave and owner.
They were nice
yeah.
and they freed them first. No, I'm sorry. That's not how this works.
Mm-hmm.
That is not, there's a power imbalance. It cannot be happily ever after if one of the persons is a villain.
And they'll always end up saying to you something that they read one time that proves them that they think they're right. Well, I read once about a slave that married her master and they were very happy. I'm like, were they? Is that real? Is that a real story? And if it's a real story, how do you know?
And I had my one Jewish friend read it and they were fine.
No. He said Jew reader.
I know. I did see that also.
His replies to every single person who responded were exactly like the am I the I asshole. I love that we got off topic, but it's so worth it. So this guy was nuts.
So I did the best I could. I got an advanced copy of a book to read. It's not your book, whoever you think you are. And I tried to read it. And the main, there was a character who was a stereotypical Jew.
Yeah.
Who evilly tried to buy the land that someone else, they wanted to buy their farm by paying them cash money. And I was
money.
Like, why does that make them a bad
shekels.
Person? Yeah. They just want to buy it. It's not like they wanted to kill you and steal it. That would be a bad thing.
That's like the Jersey City accusations. Jews were offering us money for our houses. I'm like, well, did you
that's
say no?
That's how business works.
Because if you said no, it's fine now.
Right. So I gave feedback. I emailed the publisher mm-hmm. and I emailed the author and I've heard nothing back. And meanwhile, I've
and
now,
it's an arc. It's not yeah. out yet.
And so meanwhile, okay. now I'm pretty sure I'm blacklisted from getting more arcs because I refused. I didn't want to review it in public because I was like, listen, they messed up. I wanted to give them a chance to fix it before
that's
I
nice
gave them
feel.
A can.
Yeah.
But now I've gotten no response. So I feel like maybe I just need to can them because really if you've never met a Jew.
Yeah.
And Shylock yeah. is your inspiration. Maybe
then,
don't.
Right. Then I don't trust that your Jewish character will remind me of a Jew I've ever met.
Right. And which is interesting because I've actually thought to myself, like, how do I write people that I like people characters that I don't have experience with? Like, can yeah. I write a convincing male because like I am not a man? Or can
yeah.
I write a convincing person of a different ethnicity than I am? Or can I write different religions? Or mm-hmm. like the book I'm writing, there are non-Jewish characters. Like, am I doing them a disservice?
But you're
the way
asking
I describe
the
them?
Question, which means you're doing the work to try to give them service.
Right.
Because you don't want to start seeing white people only writing white people. You
right.
don't.
That's
you
true.
Don't want to see
that's
them
true.
Starting to say,
oh, but I
can never have a person of color in my book again because I'll get it wrong. So it's not worth it. White books for white people. And that's it.
I definitely don't want them writing someone with an accent, though. Unless
oh, no, no, no. Yeah, don't do that. This is 2020. unless a person's from a different country and pronounces a letter different, like a V or S, a W or something.
And even
don't
then,
do it.
And even then, it's usually a racist trope to,
yes.
to like.
Yes.
You know, let's just say that it's not people like writing a Frenchman who's like saying a word. They're usually picking some like usually punched down ethnicity rather yeah. than like.
It's so French. Yeah. Don't try to be like, oh, I have a Jewish character in my book. I'll have her say "oi" at the beginning of every sentence. Like that's what we're trying to say.
Like the Windowwasher.
Yeah, the Windowwasher. So what we're saying, like, okay, so you know, this actually brings back. We talked about apocalyptic books. So wind it back.
Whoa.
Fahrenheit 451, which I taught for years as a teacher by Ray Bradbury. I actually like was shocked every year I would read it how much more prescient it gets. Because there's a whole speech in there that he's that Montag is listening to about from the other fireman, what's his name?
Yeah.
About how the reason books stopped getting produced was because people were scared to write them because they were afraid of being basically canceled for offending a group they couldn't possibly have predicted offense to, which is not the same thing as saying, I know that I'm going to offend someone. I'll write it anyway. It's I didn't know that there would be like a union of firemen who also happened to be policemen. It's a very niche union and that I wrote a bad character with one of them and now they're offended. Like this is unpredictable.
On the other side of that, we have the Woody Allen memoir.
Okay. Story. So that's interesting. That's interesting. What do you think of that?
So
first say what happened.
So what happened is that they, he had had a deal and then there was backlash that especially from the family itself being like, if this
the
was
Pharaohs.
Your, if this was your family and this person was like the abuser was writing the story.
When she was 7 years old, one of his daughters or stepdaughters
or adopted daughters,
or adopted daughters accused him of sexual abuse. And the judge basically threw it out, not enough evidence, blah, 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 because things were different at the time. And she really has held on to this for years, and her family's held on to this for years, that there was no justice given. And in a time when this publisher, Simon & Schuster, was it? Or who was it? Hatchet.
Hatchet, yeah.
Yeah, we think it's a hatchet, but I think it's pronounced differently. We're both just getting it wrong. I don't
you know what? But we read words.
We read words, and we'll say them out loud and get them wrong. Apparently, they were going to publish his memoir, but they're also publishing all these other books that are like Me Too books and all these books for women, and all of a sudden, it's like, Now,
and
mind
Stephen
you.
Stephen King came out and said that it was.
Well, who are they going to come after next?
That's his whole point. And so,
if he'd already gotten the book deal, then enough. Do you know how much it takes to get a book deal? Was this done secretly? Is that what I heard? Is that it wasn't done with the group decision? It was done like on the sly
to
keep it from employees.
Because people knew that it wasn't going to be very popular. So it's not that I think that unpopular stories shouldn't be told.
Yeah.
But I think that if enough people say, I don't want to read that.
Yeah.
Or I don't think that that's like, I don't think that you have the right to write a story about the South that makes it sound like
that
it
South was all hunky dory. Right. Slaves love their masters.
Just because your family history makes it sound like that. Like,
yeah.
There should be an understanding that.
But an understanding is different than making it like business. Now, mind you, businesses, if we're going to think that corporations are people, the corporations are made up of people. And those people don't want to do something. They don't have to do it.
Right.
The question is, if the entire staff had walked out, and
which I think some of them did. Yeah. They did a walkout.
And the corporation, And the corporation had said, that's nice, we're still publishing it.
Yeah.
Would they have quit their jobs?
Probably
I don't
not.
I don't think they would.
Probably not.
I think that they made the decision because they felt it was the right thing to do. Because the truth is, enough people nowadays have been accused of stuff, and then they just go, I'm just not going to reply to it. I'm just going to let it go. And guess what? 5 months later, people are still buying Harry Potter.
Yeah.
They're ignoring the fact that J.K. Rowling sent out a tweet that people didn't like,
right? Yeah.
Like, if you just ignore the problem, sometimes it goes away, which is annoying. But so, obviously, the corporation agreed with their walkout. So that's the thing with Stephen King saying, oh, who are they coming for next? Well, they can do a walkout all they want. That doesn't mean their boss has to listen to them.
Right.
The boss chose to listen to them. The book probably would have sold despite the walkout. I guarantee
I mean, then
you.
You'd say that, you know, we talked, you know, in a previous episode about the classics remade over with people of color on the cover
as Frankenstein. Like
so that got I hate to say the word canceled, but like the Barnes and Noble was like, so maybe we're not gonna do that.
Well, that was different because they quickly realized that people weren't gonna buy it. Like there's a difference between like Woody Allen memoir. I'm sorry, but whether or not the employees walk out, there's an audience for that. Just like if they let Bill Cosby write a new memoir right now, it would be a New York Times bestseller. I'm sorry, but it would. People love to hate read.
No, that's true. I do hear that.
They want to know everything. Like the Jessica Simpson book. I'm sorry. Does anyone here think the Jessica Simpson book was going to be great? But apparently it's great.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Apparently it's fantastic. Oh. Now we're in an apocalypse. Apparently that it's an apocalypse. Fantastic. And oh, apparently cool. The audiobook is fantastic too.
Oh.
She reads it.
Oh, that's good.
I know. But like, who are we to say what some people hate read things all
yeah, that's true. That's
the time.
True. That's
people
true.
Would have hate read the memoir and they would have made the money. They chose to listen to the complainers. And like, so Stephen King's comment
the problem
is, you know,
is that it's not, it's when you give somebody a microphone
yeah.
and a platform, is there an assurance that you're, that they're portraying the truth as it was?
Yeah.
Or are they like, I mean, cause OJ wrote a memoir, right?
Yeah.
And
everyone bought it.
People bought it, but I think that enough.
Because he called it "If I Did It" or something like that.
But I think enough people, and he knows enough people know. Like,
yeah.
it's a note. So I think people read it with a different mindset.
Yeah.
Where I think there are enough people who deny the victims in some of the other cases.
Well, then where's the walkout over Linda Sarsour? The Linda Sarsour has a book coming out. Where's the walkout? I'm sorry. This is an yeah. anti-Semite
yeah.
who's so anti-Semitic that even the Women's March, who held on to other anti-Semites, dropped her.
Yeah.
Okay? Where's the walkout? Where's the walkout? No one's walking out over anti-Semitism. They're not. I'm like, and if they did, would we as Jews be like, good for you?
Actually, I'd be like, oh no, now they're looking at us. Like,
yeah.
It's just going to make everyone hate us more.
That's true. That's our attitude.
There's
isn't
nothing
it?
We can do.
There's yeah. nothing we can do. We totally
damned if we
topic.
Do, damned if we don't.
I mean, we're damned if we do, damned if we don't. But I guess the discussion is how much power do you give your employees? And the answer is however much you choose to yeah. give them after they make their statements. They yeah. said what yeah. they said.
Yeah.
And the corporation said, okay, we'll listen to you.
And you're they right. They probably to. Were looking to how much support they got online
yeah.
and in the world, how many letters they got, emails they got.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, it's not just, you know, a passionate few. It's a more majority than we thought.
Right. Because the truth is most of the time when people are like on Twitter, a lot of the time it's like 100 email, Twitter accounts from one person. And they'll work together to try to get someone to pull advertising from someone. Right.
Yeah.
And the advertisers quickly go, wait, we're not going to pull advertising. That's one bot. Right. Like if you figure out that it's not actually going to affect your purse strings, then you don't do what they ask. But if you figure out it's all, the irony here is it's all about capitalism in the end.
Yeah.
It is. It's all about money.
There, I showed my daughter one of the, you know, to go back to the am I the asshole one.
Yeah.
There were 97% of the people said, yes, that person was, and 17,000 people had voted. And I was like, I usually see the votes are like a little more spread than that. But in this case,
everyone said
17,000 people voted.
About the writer?
No, it was a different one.
Okay.
And 97% were like, yeah, no.
Mm-mm. You're a jerk.
Yeah. Stop it.
It's really good. If you're not following it, you need to follow it.
I think, oh my God, there was one, it was, what it was is a guy was writing saying, I can't remember what he did. His girlfriend said he was wrong. He thinks he's right. His other friend who's a female also says that he was wrong, but he is going to Twitter or going to Reddit to be like, they both think I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. So, you know, and we're like, so.
So, oh, is this the guy who didn't believe that his girlfriend was having her period?
Yes, that's what it was.
And because he was convinced that she wasn't sleeping with him, this is going to get a little graphic for a second. She wasn't sleeping with him because she wasn't interested. And he kept saying, you know, you don't have to pretend you have your period. He was like super gaslighting her.
Yeah.
She kept trying to say to him, honey, why would I lie to you? That's crazy. Like, I do. Why would I say I do? That's why would a woman make that up unless she's trying to like get out of gym class, you know, like in the
90s. Right.
And in the end, she showed him
how many dead grandmothers. How many dead grandmothers could you possibly have?
Exactly. She in the end decided to show him she had her period, and he thought that was vile and disgusting, and he got mad at her and kicked her out. And his friends were like, "Dude, you forced her into that position. You accused her of lying. She showed you you weren't. You're willing to have sex with her, but you're not willing to look at that.
Right.
Like, you need to, you're a child."
Oh, actually, I think it was funny.
This God, that got graphic. Oh.
I might leave the other one, but there was another one where it was a friends with benefits situation, and she was on her period, and he was like, "So don't even bother coming over for dinner then."
Yeah. And she's like, "Well, we're also friends.
But
forget
no.
the benefits. Like, sometimes we used to hang out for dinner all the time. Like, what happened to the friendship part? All right. We're,
so the apocalypse.
We'll get back to it.
Apocalypse brings really terrible relationships also.
Let's pretend
it's
that
it's a dating apocalypse.
It's a dating apocalypse. We're going to get back to it in just a minute. we'll cue the music and the advertising. Yoni wasn't kidding when she said a post-apocalyptic dating.
Oh, yeah, no, the dating world's pretty bad. We've been watching Love is Blind, which, you know, it has a Jewish element to it because they're very Shomer-Nagia. You can't even see each other until you get engaged.
You're the irony
in isolation.
Yeah, the irony of trying to be futuristic by actually going backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of post-apocalyptic books that take place in times when you've reverted back to. I think that's like a common trope is.
Yes.
The apocalypse has come. Now we're in the Wild West. Or the Canticle for Leibowitz, it's now the Middle Ages again.
Yeah.
And there's like monasteries trying to preserve history, but it's like they're preserving the Library of Congress, not like a manuscript or like
that
a scroll.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah. So and we talked about one of the ones I liked is the Gunslinger Girl.
Gunslinger Girl. They're all of a sudden they're in the Old West again.
Yeah. It's in the Old West. It's like the old Wild Wild West.
Well, you know, the testing, when I was reading, did you read the testing series?
No.
When I was reading you're going to love it.
Okay.
Even my son has read it like a million times at this point. We've all passed it around. The testing series is your classic, you know, something happened to America, like Divergent.
Yeah.
And now they're living in these colonies, basically, where each colony kind of has its own purpose. It's trying to rebuild America. And in each colony, they try to identify people that would be ideal to send to university, like in the capital.
Mm.
And the main character, she gets kind of chosen to go to. And
is
you have
she
to
16
go.
And extra talented and doesn't know how pretty she is?
But super klutzy too.
Okay.
Always falling, but at the same time, never misses a shot that she takes, 100%. Which is super unusual. Like always. She hasn't fallen into the big ditch, which why is there a huge, massive ditch with no fencing around it that surrounds the dorm? I don't know.
That is against the Torah.
Yeah. Why is there a big dish with no fencing? And we learn Gemara. So she, the testing is fantastic. So she has to go through a series of tests. And she's starting to wonder, like, in each round, when people don't pass, aren't they not just sent back to their colonies? What happens to them? Mm. Are they being killed? They're not being killed. So what is it? And it starts to become, like, this huge thing they have to get through to the end in order to, and she has to decide, like, do I want to change things from the inside or do I want to change things from the outside?
Yeah.
Like, do I want to leave this big test or do I want to progress?
Yeah.
Is someone on to me? Is there a love triangle? Is the love triangle real or false? Am I being tracked to the GPS monitor? But the way it's designed is like Gunslinger Girl, like they're living in these very sandy, dusty colonies that are just kind of trying to rebuild.
Yeah.
You know, but their ways around doing it are kind of like the Hunger Games. Like, let's let the teenagers suffer.
Oh, my God.
Why would one do that? Like, if we were post-apocalyptic, would we be like, look at those children.
The teenagers are our future.
Yeah. Like, well, in Starless, they do that.
There was a suggestion. I think Netanyahu made a suggestion that they should send children to, like, disinfect public areas.
Because they're not getting infected?
Yes.
As opposed to just sending people in hazmat suits?
Yeah, was
he kidding? Like,
nine-year-olds
don't get it. Let's mobilize them into units.
Mobilize the youth.
Early membership in the IDF. They get it over with. They never have to serve.
I don't know.
Sounds like a joke he'd make.
Maybe. I just don't know anymore. It's funny because, you know, I've talked before about The Wool Omnibus by Hugh Howey.
Okay.
And the first book is, you know, it's, gosh, like, I don't know, so hundreds of years after the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's in a, well, I don't want to give it too much away, but, like, you know, it's about humanity that survived and, like, what's happening and what it goes into a little bit about what is outside of their enclosure and, like, how society has changed and, like, the social structure and this and that through the eyes of the sheriff, I guess, who is the main narrator of that one. The second book flashes back to how the apocalypse happened.
I like that.
And I found it terrifying because it was very benign. It was, you know, basically like, I hate to boil it down and I don't want to spoiler it, but it was like, there was a series of bureaucratic choices that led to the apocalypse.
But you can see that. You can see that happening.
100%. There wasn't a supervillain. There wasn't like.
There wasn't a virus.
An accident. There wasn't. It was just.
Look what we're living in right now. We're living in a world where every country is handling a virus differently.
Yeah.
Our country is handling it by saying, oh, there's testing available. Then you get on the phone and they're like, I go, is there testing available? Like if I was running a fever, and they go, well, we're working on it. I go, so what you're saying is if I was running a fever and I just came back from Israel, You would tell me to just stay in my room, even though in the last 10 days I have gone everywhere, including a pool, and touched many people. My daughter's been with lots of other children. I have kids.
Have you licked any envelopes and stamps?
I have not licked any envelopes and stamps, but they say, and I don't have enough information. It looks like a regular common cold, and my grandmother's in her 90s. And like, what would you have done? Yeah. So like bureaucracy of saying one thing, and then the truth comes out that it's a different thing, it could actually lead to an accidental apocalypse.
And I've heard that there are regimes in the world who are trying to suppress the news on this because they don't want to incite a panic, which I understand that. At the same time,
but are people panicking?
Or are they spending money?
There is
no oat milk at Trader Joe's, Jessica. No oat milk.
Yeah, have you tried it? It's delicious.
I haven't, but I still think it's not really going to get you through any.
No, but it's a fantastic milk substitute. I don't drink milk in my coffee, but oat milk is delicious. Okay,
but
it's really low spice chai.
But if you suppress the news, you're keeping panic down, but you're also keeping people's ability to protect themselves down.
Yeah.
So this is where, you know, there was a person.
Did you buy Costco stock?
I did not. I should have Purell.
Do it tomorrow.
But a woman had posted that she had just gotten off a cruise ship, and everyone's like, why would you get on a cruise in this climate? And we're like, well, a week ago, the news was not the same.
Right.
Nobody knew. I flew to San Francisco. I mean, I kind of knew that people were like not supposed to fly places. I was like, oh, it's domestic flight.
We thought that it was at the beginning of my trip to Israel, we thought it was just in China.
Yeah.
By the end of day one, thought it was just China and Italy.
Yeah.
By the end of the week, we were like, well, it's in Israel now.
You're a plane ride away from literally everybody. And they found that in Ebola. So one of my favorite books, The Hot Zone, was tracing the spread of Ebola. There are other, like Andromeda Strain, there's other books. There was an interesting article I read today about World of Warcraft actually had a bug at one point that started impacting characters. And so the whole thing in World of Warcraft, you get your character and you level them up through challenges or winning and getting loot and doing all this stuff. So if you are a very high level character, this bug would slowly every day you'd lose power. But if you had enough to give, then you could probably wait it out until they patched it and figured it out. But if you were a low level character, you were dead. Like dead. And so they said there were dead bodies everywhere of all these characters just littering the landscape.
Weird.
So they tracked the studies. Epidemiologists have studied it. So what happened is some high power characters would purposely go into areas where newbies were playing and infect them on purpose. Some characters quarantined themselves and just tried to wait it out. Yeah. And so like they tracked how people reacted because it wasn't that different from how people react, you know, for the AIDS epidemic or for STDs spread.
Yeah.
Like some people are going to go out and infect people on purpose.
Yeah.
But
most people
maliciously or ignorantly or, you know, incompetently, some people are going to be more careful about it. Some people are going to be like overly cautious about it.
Right. I feel like most people lean into the caution, at least at first.
You know, I don't know. There are definitely people who've laughed about like washing hands and I'm like, but you really just should.
Right. Like we should already, but like now you should also be doing it for other things too that you normally wouldn't have thought of as hand washing situations. Like I think that that's the thing is that people are like, why is everyone washing hands? You should already be washing hands. Like, why are you using up more soap? And I'm like, well, because now every time I touch my face, I want to wash my hands.
Whereas
before, if I touched my face, I wasn't going to be like, oh, let me go wash my hands. I would just be like, I touched my face. But now you're telling me that it's specific to spreading something that doesn't just go through us and not hurt anybody. Right. Now you're talking about spreading something that is hurting people. So like before it's like, oh, it's a common cold. We'll all be fine. No big deal. But now you're talking, which we really shouldn't be like that.
Right. Because there are people who are impacted by even small colds and small.
Well, that's what's interesting is like the abundance of caution has led a lot of people to say, wait, so now it's okay for people to work remotely. So now it's okay for people to use single-use plastics who have disabilities who normally would be told, sorry, we don't have any plastic straws for you. Like now what you're telling me is you're defaulting to the same thing that Jews and people with disabilities, basically anyone that's trying to get out of work for a day, have been begging you for a century.
Yes.
And to protect yourself, you're like, don't come into work.
So on one hand, like I get it because it's funny. My university was like, no, we can't have kosher food. If we had kosher, we'd also have to have food for the Hindus and the Muslims.
Of course.
And the this and that.
God forbid.
And so my answer was.
And?
Yes. You should. And then at some point they may have, I think they did eventually get it. And so like on one hand, I'm like, and I told you this all along.
Yeah.
But I'm more happy now going forward now my office and universities have more accommodations. And yeah, I hate that took this to do it.
If, in case people don't understand the level we're at, UW, University of Washington,
50,000 students.
Has 50,000 students who are now watching their classes on Zoom for the rest of the quarter.
But you know why? And like, you can't be infected by listening to us. But when you look at the CDC's website, it's like
we're a cluster.
A couple areas of China, Italy, a cruise ship, King County, Washington, Washington State. And I was like, oh, we actually show up in the top 10.
I literally did something very brave today. I got my nails done. Oh. And
no, but you know what? I want to support businesses that are probably super impacted.
Especially businesses that already are sanitation oriented. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, but if you're going to a nail salon that is changing out the blades and the brushes and everything every time, you're already in trouble.
Right.
If you're my nail salon, they wear masks anyway.
Yeah.
Everyone wears a mask.
Which is good because you know what? For their health, I don't want them breathing.
That's why they wear it. I asked her, I said, why do you guys wear masks? She goes, because you're breathing in fumes.
All day.
Mm-hmm.
All day. No. So yes.
And they're already wearing gloves and they're already wearing masks.
Yeah, I
literally go to a place that has more sanitation than my doctor's office. And so I was like, and it was full. I went and it was full of people just
And to circle out back around to our topic,
yeah,
as we are wont to do occasionally.
Yeah.
So a lot of the post-apocalyptic books have this idea of fear of something different.
Yeah.
So there's another book that I always harp on and through, The Fever King. And it's interesting that it's also a disease. But in this disease, you get magic. So either the magic kills you, but if you don't die, then you're just, now you have magic. And so this is the apocalypse that's spreading.
Is it like
a
50-50?
No, it's much grimmer than that, unfortunately. The plague that spreads is much grimmer than that. The thing is that the people look at people who have magic as a danger and people from plague-ridden areas as disease vectors. And so there's a lot of discrimination and it ends up being very classist because you think about it, like who is most likely to have medical attention and to have the right sanitation and to have the right access to, you know, the preventatives are the haves, and the have-nots now are crammed in what they call ghettos, obviously, and, you know, the same way. So, like, you put people living...
Is that like The Handmaid's Tale? Is The Handmaid's Tale also classist? I haven't read it yet.
Oh, so you know what? I don't... It's more gender.
It's gender.
But it is also classist, because I think that they're the women who are wives, and they're the women who are the handmaidens.
So I think the situation is, in these books, just like what's happening right now, is, let's say, God forbid, this virus didn't go away.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about is not like we're so used to, we hear about a virus or a skin thing and this and that. Like even when hand, foot, and mouth is going around to school,
the fact that I know
goes away.
Well, yeah, but it's funny because this is one of the first times I've actually known, I've been personally impacted.
Yeah.
Where I've known people who've been impacted. Like in the previous ones, like we joked, not joke, I hate to say that, but you know, the dark humor about, you know, the bird flu came around and like this and that, but it was always so far away and always.
And now it's like, oh, it's in our county.
I can name people I know who are.
And also our friends in the East Coast and a lot of our friends in Israel who've just come back from traveling are automatically quarantined, but some of them are like quarantined in their rooms. And one woman posting about being quarantined in her room and she's listening to her husband and trying to wrangle the kids alone when normally the two of them, it takes effort. Now it's down to one person and it's a one man job and it's a mess out there. And all the mommy's replies were, take a vacation in your room. Enjoy it.
It's
stop
like
thinking
spa.
About it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Play some loud music.
Well, I mean, even you were just in Israel. And so when someone posted, there's a bulletin saying, watch out if you were in this place or this place. And I was looking.
And I read
like,
it in detail.
I read it in detail for you. I was looking at it and I was like, I should send this to Jessica because she was here. I saw your pictures.
Someone
sent
it to
that.
Me and I went through it in detail and I was like, okay, I ate at that cafe but the day before or the morning before. And then we would have been at that place, but we went to this other thing.
That's how small the world is in this case. Because, and you know, everything's a plane ride away. Everything's, you can't run from it. And I think that's another thing.
The Heathrow, do you know how Heathrow works now? The way Heathrow works now is they basically have this beautiful mall. I mean, it feels like we're in a shopping mall with food court and bookstores and tons of restaurants. And in the center of it is all the seating that you can. You can shop for Swarovski or you can do a tasting. It's huge. It goes forever. No one waits by the gates anymore. There's no waiting areas by the gates. You are required to hang out in either a private lounge, which you have to have a card to get into, or in that big shopping mall, which means that after you get off a plane from wherever you are coming from in the world, waiting for your transfer, you and people from every other country in the world are all hanging out together in one space waiting for your gate to be called, and they and then you go immediately to your gate and board.
And that's, again, the opposite in a post-apocalyptic world, there's isolation.
Yeah.
Nobody else knows what is happening in the rest of the world. Most people don't have contact outside their town. Like, that's another thing that they take. It's like the opposite of what's happening now. Right now, the borders are, you know,
open,
you know, yeah. they're are open and you can go everywhere. You hear everything. I could read blog posts and writing and, you know, insights from anyone in the world. I could learn about any culture I want. The post-apocalypse, again, they shrink it down. They shrink it down so that, you know, you have to now like travel to go to see a place to know if the next town over is alive. You have to like, you know,
the assumption being that somehow technology has failed.
Not just technology, but because you close your borders also. Some of it is you close your borders. There's a few I read where it was funny, where there's like I'm using hand gestures, but there's the entire West Coast is one place. The entire East Coast is something else. And the middle, it's like nothing. And I'm like, well, it's kind of like that today. Yeah. You drive through Texas, there's a lot of nothing. But there's, because it's like a no man's land, it's a literal corridor of nothing.
Yeah.
And like they really don't communicate with each other. And they keep it like a demilitarized zone because they don't want people mingling back and forth because there's distrust, there's civil unrest. Like in some of the books, there's a health reason. In some of the books, it's just like, we are just hunkering down. We don't want you to take over our country.
But look at the way it changes behavior too.
Yeah.
Like even personal behavior can become tradition later, right? Look at all the Jewish traditions that we have now that were changed because of situations like the Crusades, kidnapping and murdering and raping so many people. That they changed the halachas regarding Yisker because there were so many people had no family members to say Yisker for them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so even the language of Yisker and the halachic requirements of who had to say it, what if you didn't know if they were going to come back or not?
That's why Tanayim is at the chuppah, right before the chuppah now, instead of, it used to be like a certain, I don't remember how long. They don't do that now because it's like,
something could happen.
Yeah, something could happen.
Something could happen in the month and the person disappears and now you have no get, and you would have had a luckily to get one just from tonight. So like situations and devastating situations change our behavior. So in Shul the Shabbos, apparently the rabbi announced, okay, everyone, nobody is going to kiss the Torah today. Just be careful not to put your hands on the Torah. And apparently like a 9-year-old boy, not like thinking or listening, immediately ran up. The minute the Torah entered, came to walk and just kissed the Torah, and whole shul just burst out into giggles. Like, because it's a kid, you know, but even the behavior is about whether or not you air touch the mezuzah or actually touch
it. Okay. That is not kissing a mezuzah. Is not, I mean, I don't want to say it's not a thing. It's a thing, but it's not really a thing.
We don't all reach it. Sure. People can't always reach
it's
the mezuzah.
It's not just that. I've had people push me aside to kiss the mezuzah. And let
with
me tell
mouth?
You.
No,
they
hand?
Put their hand, they kiss they kiss their hand and then they touch the mezuzah. First of all, you've now pushed a person to kiss a scroll. Bad. I don't think Hashem likes that.
No, bad.
Because I am also a Torah. Yes. Just like the
That is right.
Right? Like, don't shove a person to kiss
a woman.
To kiss a thing. Oh, yeah, I mean, like, usually it's children, I'll say. Like,
that's
also
true.
Not always being pushed by adults, but it does happen. But it's like, you know, it's a thing. So if I'm telling you not to kiss the mezuzah, or now we're taking extra pains to clean them, because, you know, that's a novel idea. So maybe we should wipe them down occasionally. We're not curtailing your Jewish practice, because kissing a mezuzah should not be held to the same as like a Megillah reading or, you know, communal prayer or whatever. I'm actually, because I'm like, I appreciate occasionally that I'm a woman. I can nope out of things if I don't want to.
I like the way you phrase that. Nope out.
I just noped out. I was like, I don't even want to, it's not that I didn't even want to go to shul, but I was like, listen, I was invited to a house of somebody who davens at the different shul. I could go over there and not go to my normal shul, or I could sleep in an hour and then not walk past the host and then back and forth. And like, normally I would feel more impetus to go.
Mm-hmm.
But this week it was like, all right, you know, I already knew.
It changes her behavior. My grandma never misses shul. She didn't go because my mom said, hello, half of a nursing home in the other side of town is dead. And literally like 63 people out of 120 are still in their rooms, whereas everyone else has been sent to hospital for something.
Yeah.
And some of them are dead already. Like, it's crazy. Like, it's insane. She says to my grandma, like, stay home, please.
And you know what? It's funny because
don't be communal spaces.
Again, not funny, funny, not funny. So on Sunday, my son was sick, and I love him, but it hits him hard every time he gets sick.
Gets man cold.
And so, no, he was like
an actual sick.
Yeah, he was really sick.
Oh, interesting.
And I had the same thing, but it didn't impact me hardly at all. And my daughter had like half as much, like a quarter of what he had. And I had like maybe 10% of what he had. So I was thinking, you know, I was like, I could be carrying who knows what, but I'm like good woman for to plow.
Yeah.
Like I'm, you know, it doesn't really knock me down.
Unless
so much.
I'm vomiting, I usually just go about my day.
Yeah. Like I'm, yeah, I, as a mom. So I said, you know what? I can stay home. So yeah. I'm going to, because
I think I stayed home.
I don't know why.
All week. You know. Like I got back from Israel and I was like, I'm pretty much going to stay home as much as possible. Or as often I can, and not touch anything, or like until I'm 100% sure. I just came international, but again, it doesn't mean I am not carrying something because asymptomatic.
Yeah, exactly.
It means, like you said, like strong shtetl girl.
We just deal with it, man. Like push. When I was sick, I had no voice. I was still working. Yeah. I still was parenting. I made dinner. I think if I'm loud enough, not loud enough because I have no voice, but if I tell enough people that I'm sick, people will send me soup or dinner or something.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not going to use it unless I really need it, you know?
Oh, I've just thought of something. So this book, I pulled it out and I was like, so I think Aliza Gnauer recommended it to me. And Aliza always gives good recommendations. I think this is the one, the Book of Madness.
We had revenge on her also, because now she's like, I want to look at that book, but my pile is so big, but I want to look at that book.
Oh yeah. She has a huge stack of books from us. So in this one, I think this is the one, Gabrielle Mandini is a brilliant young woman who possesses something rare in Venice of 1590, access, learning, and intuition to become a doctor.
Oh, I like these. I've read several like this.
The Book of Madness and Cures by Regina Almalvini. Her entry to this profession is provided by her father, a renowned physician. And in return, she helps him research his magnum opus, a vast encyclopedic work called The Book of Diseases, recording how the water of Rue lends second sight, how the manifestations of solar madness arise, and how the horn of the unicorn cures lack of desire. This is obviously the 16th century. They thought these things were true. In her own practice, Gabriella has honed her natural ingenuity in administering to women eager to be patients. Mm-hmm. So then when her father disappears, Gabriella is banished from the Guild of Physicians because her father's no longer around to
manage her. She was like a beloved pet before, but now she has no master. So.
Right, but she really wants to be a doctor. So she decides she's going to go try to find her father, bring him back for selfish and unselfish reasons. And she sets across Europe with servants following clues from her father's letters. And she's wondering if he's been gripped by madness or has found some shattering medical discovery. Yeah. She crosses Switzerland and German kingdom and Europe and Edinburgh. She traces him through strange forbidding cities all the way to the spice-scented streets of Morocco. Okay. So in this book, I believe this is the one where there is a scene where there's, like a lot of disease going around, and she discovers that the monastery has taken a Christian child that died and placed them in like an open casket, basically permanently, so that people can come and touch the thumb or the crook of the knee or something of this dead body. And obviously they're all getting diseases. But what's crazy is like people give donations to the monastery in exchange for the right to touch a dead body. So someone comes to her with like an eye problem. And she's like, why is your eye problem worse than when you came to see me? Like, why? I also went to the monastery and I rubbed the hand of the dead body on my eye for the miracle of the cure. And she's like, no, don't. I think that's this book. Don't do that. And what's funny is I actually have in the one I'm writing, I also have like, that situation where a monastery is like, let's put this child on a thing. And I'm like, it's like a hint to this one. Like, I don't show what happens after, but I hope that my readers will be like, don't do that. That's going to end up poorly for everybody. She died of disease.
Like, how Tito's vodka was like, so don't use us to wash hands.
We're and not they had to explain
enough.
It.
Yeah. We don't have a high enough alcohol content to mimic.
They're not high enough. Yes. People think vodka is stronger than Purell. It's not. Yeah.
It's funny that you say that because Talia just had me, we were reading from Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, and it was a very interesting section about when they say Vahi versus, what was the other one? Basically the idea of like, we talk about, Bamei, Matis Yahu, right? So like, it talks about the past from the light of the future.
Yeah.
And then when it talks about the future is created from the present. So the words that they use, shows the heat, not just Purim, but in everywhere in the Torah, it's talking about the past, but there's part of the future in it.
Yeah.
Because the future we are in now was created by the past. And when it talks about the future world, like the redemption and this and that, it uses specific language that ties the present into it, because what we are in the present has created the future.
really, it's all about Hishtadlus, right? It's all about trying and putting in actual effort and knowing that your efforts and your trying are actually going to affect the outcome.
Well, it's good and bad, because when we read these post-apocalyptic novels, like sometimes they gloss over what happened. How did it get this way?
And then you get like a novella released later with the short stories in it.
Yeah, sometimes, because you know what? Happened.
Yeah.
I find, so there's interesting parts to dissecting how the dystopia is.
Yeah.
And like what makes it what it is, and like what, how humanity has changed, and class, and we talked about borders and this and that. But I find it's really interesting. Like, how did it get there?
I like that question too. Like, at what point were they so prepared? Like with Starglass, at what point did they go, we know that something bad is about to happen to Earth, and we're prepared enough to set up these very advanced high-tech ships and civilizations that are enormous and can carry thousands of people.
Yeah.
And we already know what other planets are habitable. Like, how did they get enough time to be able to do that? Like, were they warned this is coming in 50 years? And did people believe it? Like, people believed it enough to get on the ship.
So let me tell you that one of the books I enjoyed, and, you know, I know it wasn't for everybody, but I enjoyed it immensely, was The Calculating Stars by Mary Robinette Koval. So I really liked it because it has a bit of what if. It's alternate history in the 50s, I think. 50s, let's say 50s. A giant meteor hits the East Coast of the United States, wiping it out. And the rest of the book is like, what happens? And there's one woman who, like, she is a mathematician and she does some calculations and she's like, well, it ain't over because we have this long until the Earth is uninhabitable because
it's changed the system. It's
changed the entire, like, it's changed the climate, or it's going to be changing the climate in these ways and this and that. Mm-hmm. So there's the initial devastation, but then there's the, hey guys, we can't just like literally undig from this disaster. We need to start planning now, like you said, because in 150 to 100 years, we got to be out of here. Which means we need to unite the space race. Knowing
there's a future.
Right. So it changes the entirety of the space race. And it makes it an international problem rather than an intranational problem.
I didn't know that's what it was about.
And, of course, the character is Jewish, which is fabulous.
Oh,
you know, I mean, there's fun characters. And there's, like, really interesting, like, what I also like is she did a great job of saying, my main character is a white lady, white Jewish lady. Here's how she interacts with all the people of color around her, and she does wrong sometimes.
Oh yeah,
and she is self-aware about it and fixes and figures it out, right? So like the other people are like, we don't need no white savior, thank you very much. But then in some places they do. It's like, not that they need them. Sorry, that's like the worst phrase. But like, she can get things done that they can't because of no one's listening to them because they're an underrepresented minority and nobody wants to hear what they have to say. So. It was very interesting, but it was the idea of like, would someone listen? Like, if an apocalypse happened, we talked about this, you know, just in our synagogue, right? Yeah. Someone was like, well, we should talk about, like, you know, what we should do if there's a terrorist attack. Like, God forbid, there's something we should do. And I was like, okay, I get that. But can we table that? Because we don't even know what to do if there's a fire.
Yeah.
Or if there's an earthquake.
Yeah.
We don't
you need
have
to be prepared for the small things if you want people to believe the big things.
Right. If I ran into the shul and said, we need to evacuate right now, we don't have a plan.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter why we have to evacuate or why we have to hide in place.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. The fact is we don't have a plan for any of those things. So we can't like jump ahead. So that's the problem, is like, there are some steps that we have missing in the world.
Yeah.
If someone came to us right now, Mashiach came and said, hey y'all, you best get over to Israel right now, 'cause there's a war breaking out. There'd be people who'd be like, no, I'm good.
Right. Like, show me,
you know, like,
and I want to, like, that's the thing is,
how many plagues did it take?
Who are the people that believe it enough?
Yeah.
To go, we need to be prepared for this thing.
Yeah.
Or is it all just about fallout? Like, even the Hunger Games and Divergent, is it all the fallout? Because sometimes I wonder if that's what's happening, is you're looking at not people that were smart enough to plan.
Right.
The world is actually being run by the people that were left over because they were in the outskirts of society, and that's not in a good way. Right? Yeah. Like, these are not the people that were, okay, you know, so hold on. We are going to do a wrap up in just a moment. Let's do another little musical little musical interlude. So yeah, we were just saying like the people that survive are oftentimes the people you don't want to have survived.
Right. They're either through happenstance or just dumb luck. So it's funny because we talked about the teenagers. I read another book called, what was it called? I don't remember what it's called, but basically there's a disease that wipes out everyone between the ages of 17 and like 65. And they're just all dead. So all you have left are the elderly mm-hmm. and the children.
I think I know
Sliders?
What you're talking about.
I think it's called Sliders.
Yeah, didn't they make a show? I think they tried.
Maybe.
Okay.
So in this one, the idea is that like they then had medical advances. And so now these older people are living to like 80, 90, 100 years old, like spry. But they rent the bodies of the teenagers so that they can like do more stuff. Well, so the thing is that now these teenagers don't have parents who are like, no, grandma, you cannot rent my child to like relive your gymnastic days or like go surfing. You know, and this is, it's like, it wasn't who we planned to survive. It's just who happened to survive.
And then oftentimes, listen, you can have people in the outskirts of society they know how to survive in the face of evil, right? Like we talk about like the true story of the Bielski brothers starting a resistance in the forest in Belarus against the Nazis because they were on the outskirts of society. They lived by the forest. They lived mm-hmm. by the woods. Mm-hmm. They didn't have classic jobs like everyone mm-hmm. else. They were a little more rough and tough. And so for them to be able to survive out in the woods, and it was their instinct, let's go.
Right, hurry, let's go.
Bad guys are here. And they were able to protect people that normally would be like accountants. And the Bielskis were like, we're not accountants. We chop wood, right? Like, this is who we are.
It's funny you say, because I was telling you during the break, is that I grew up with only electric can openers. Mm-hmm. And then when I started keeping Shabbos, I was like, well, like, that's not going to work. And someone's like, well, you just buy a manual can opener. I'm like, a what? I'd never even seen them because my whole life we had an electric can opener. Like, I didn't know how to open a can using it. It took me a long time. I had to figure out because I also got that one that you, like, you have the saw back and forth. And now I have the one with the twisty thing. But, like, we always had an electric can
opener. And now you know how to open one with that one, right? Flip it upside down, rub it on concrete.
No.
Oh, there is the Russian hacker guy.
I'll die. Okay. Well, I can knit.
Watch his YouTube videos.
Okay, listen. I know how to knit.
You can knit us a can of tuna then.
No, I'm saying I need to trade skills with somebody who knows how to open
Fine.
Cans.
I'll open all the cans and I'll tell you which side of the tree the moss grows on.
And I'll make sure
on,
you've got clothes.
And you make sure we're all dressed.
And I can cook. I can, you know, I'm pretty handy.
Yeah. With other things. I can start a fire real well.
Ah, okay. So there you go. We just need to pool responsibilities.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
I can start a good fire. I can set up a tent really beautiful. Right? Set up a whole campsite.
All right.
Hit some sticks together, stop the wolves and bears. No, that's only in the movies. Everyone's got their skills. And so the Bielski Brothers is obviously a true story.
Yeah.
But we always ask ourselves, like, when I was teaching, I would say about apocalyptic books, that there are different kinds of apocalyptic books, right?
Yes.
There's even, I think someone talks about in the intro to Fahrenheit 451, there's, I think it was Neil Gaiman that actually wrote an intro. There's what if this thing that's going on keeps going on. So like mm-hmm. I said before, what if coronavirus doesn't go away?
Yeah.
What if it doesn't go away? And what if the CDC doesn't develop enough tests? And what if certain countries hoard their tests? Like, you start to ask yourself a series of questions based on what if this thing keeps happening. Then there's what if this other thing changed, right? Like, what if we found out that presidents could have unlimited terms and didn't have to be elected?
Yeah.
Right? You ask yourself a question. And the question is often like, what if something changed? What if something doesn't change? What if birds suddenly were predatory against people? Like, you ask yourself ridiculous questions, but then you start to break down like, okay, well, what would happen then? Right? And that's one of the ways that a lot of these books are created. But then the way that this is going down, I expect to see a lot of inspiration in books in the next few years.
There was an interesting, it's funny you say that, because there was an interesting book I read where, you know, because it's always, is it a natural disaster?
Yeah.
Is it someone evil? Is it whatever? So there's also another one where it's aliens. The answer is aliens.
Answer is aliens.
And gosh, it's another one where I can't remember the name. And I think I talked about it in a previous book, but the idea is that there were some archaeologists who were really tracking down these strange medallions that they were finding in like unexpected places. There's in Greece, they're in Egypt, they're here. I was like, that's weird. And it all kind of ties back to the Tower of Babel in some way.
Cool.
And so, well, yes and no. So then it becomes a worldwide sensation, but then people are disappearing and dying. So some people, like, they keep finding this mysterious like explosion site where there used to be 15 people there and now they're all gone. And then there's two dead bodies and one unconscious person who is out of their minds. So what is happening on these sites? Why is there an explosion? Why are some people gone? Some people dead and some people like now brainless. Like, they literally are just, like, lobotomized.
Yeah.
So, like, how is this happening? What is going on? And so it's funny because the first book stops before it gets, like, you can see, like, uh-oh, if this keeps happening at this rate, like,
right.
It's not good.
Right.
And I haven't read the second book yet, but I want to because you're like, because you see that they're like, oh. And there are people who are like, this is a miracle. It's amazing. Yeah. They've been raptured up.
Always. There's always someone good. That thinks it's raptured.
If you got left behind, it meant that you were unworthy and everyone who got taken was good.
Like, this is
and
the
then,
end.
And then there are several people who are like, that's good.
Okay, did you watch This Is the End?
No, I did not.
Okay, This Is the End is about the rapture.
Okay.
It's hilarious.
Okay.
It's like Jonah Hill and Seth Rogen and all them, this whole crew of like, and they're basically playing themselves
okay.
as horrible people who are comedians who use a lot of drugs who live in LA, who they are like, they, yeah. who they consider themselves in real life. And the rapture happens and none of them get raptured. And they're all sitting around trying to figure out if it's because they're Jewish, if it's because they use too much weed, if it's because they sleep with too many girls, and like they have a big party, like and they every people start slowly redeeming themselves and getting raptured. Channing Tatum's in it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he does not get raptured.
Oh,
it is hilarious, and it ends weird because it's like a Mel Brooks movie. Like, no one knows how to make it end, so they're just like, let's bring in the Backstreet Boys and have them dance.
On, it's the end
in heaven, right?
Like, it's the end.
How do you know it's the end? Because this is the end of Backstreet Boys dancing on a cloud, like the end of a Mel Brooks movie, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I that's to me like I apocalyptic things. You have to come up with like a hopeful ending, right? Like,
do you though? Because I think a lot. It's funny because this is another reason I like to read romance because. You are assured a happy ending in a romance.
Yeah.
And you are not in a post-apocalyptic book. Because sometimes you're...
I want one, though.
You're, like, like, even if your protagonist is alive, you're like, but are you alive? Like, well, what you had to suffer and your people dying and, like, are you maimed?
Is
and
this
like,
worth living?
What so is like, worth... What is, yeah, what is your tomorrow going to look like?
That's why the end of WALL-E was so great. Because the end of WALL-E yeah. is, like, we can bring back life on Earth and right. life can regrow.
Right.
And with that, I think... I didn't realize how big the genre was. We could keep going forever.
So it's funny because my daughter, when she was like 11, was like, so she went through a phase where she didn't want to read anything that was sci-fi or fantasy, or whatever. And then she went through a really long phase. She's like, is that a post-apocalyptic novel? Because I only read things that are dystopian. And I was like, I guess that's a fine. There's plenty. Go read all of them.
I think that there's right now, during the thick of what's happening with the COVID, that people aren't necessarily going to be like rushing to publish because people are like actually dying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I think in a year from now, you're going to see a few. If Emir Tashem, like this, the epidemic slows down and people right. stop and they manage it and they actually do a good job, that hopefully it will stop. And then we'll all read books that are post apocalyptic about
because
like,
people
disease.
Now have had a taste of like what it feels like because people are impacted
to feel out of control.
What I actually would love to see is people again, we talked about Own Voices once, is yeah. like. I know what it's like to be a white collar worker in a metropolitan area. I'd like to hear what the rest of the world sees or what other people's experiences are in this because
yeah.
it's going to be markedly different. I want a story by the, you know, disabled woman in a wheelchair with a feeding tube who has to figure out like
right.
this is a scary time when my caretaker like not or my healthcare worker can't get gloves.
Yeah.
And so now I can't, you know, like or like, I, you know,
or the bus isn't single running mom as often. With six kids who works at Heathrow.
Right.
Who is sitting there trying to wipe down her gloves between every passport.
Right.
She knows she has to go to work. And right. she's like, I have a kid with asthma and I have a kid with bronchiolitis. And here I am going to work every day, swiping everyone's passport.
Touching all the money.
And they've all been on
all the waitresses yeah. who've touched everybody.
And they're not changing their gloves between. So they really are like super self-conscious about like touching their face. And
yeah,
it's,
yeah,
we're going to
yeah, yeah,
see
yeah.
things that were never thought of before.
Yes.
And I think that we're living something that is so... We have so much information, but because we have so much information, we feel like we don't have any because not because we don't have any, but because there's nothing we can do with the information that we've been given.
Yeah. yeah
right.
Yeah.
The only thing we can do is just be super Seattle and like stay in our houses and like not go anywhere. And I think when a movie's released, it's just released straight to TV and we'll just all buy them.
Right.
And that'll be fine. I'll pop popcorn and our yeah. my house and we'll, yeah. The fact that you and I are in the same place is because like we're all swimming in the same bubble anyway.
That's true. That's right.
Yeah.
I definitely have way fewer vegetables than I probably should have in my home right
oh
now.
Oh my God.
I'll be clear.
Me too. I really genuinely need to hit the produce market soon. So yeah, Hold on. My husband is literally in the room, like, trying to figure out if we're still podcasting. We are still podcasting. We're wrapping it up. This is happening. No, he's being nice. I don't have to wrap it up. I know. I'm aware. See? Oh, it's International Women's Day.
It's true. That is
so
also
I do what I want. I do what I want. That's I do what I want every day. That's the truth.
Right.
You know, he just laughs. Like, we, you know.
There, that's another, like, so there's often, like I said, classist, xenophobic, gender, you know, exploration of, like, what is it like when these things break down? Yeah. And, like, people who maybe shouldn't have as much power have power, and what happens to the groups that have less power in those relationships. So we talked about Handmaid's Tale. That's, like, one where it's, like, oh, so, you know, people are telling me what to do with my body. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, they're discounting my experiences. Uh-huh.
I mean, like, seriously, if there was an apocalypse and we had to rebuild and it was all, like, us doing it, like, International Women's Day and it's an apocalypse and all the women are in charge now, I think we would rebuild something very different than the looks right now, because we'd be like, wait, we could do whatever we want.
You know, we don't have enough resources for weapons, so let me focus on growing food right now.
Yeah. Like you were saying about vegetables, is we're, like, not hitting the produce market as much as we should. So because we're trying to not leave our house as often as we normally would, where I would be like, oh, on the way home from carpool, I'll hit the produce market with the kids and everyone will pick something out and we'll all touch everything. Like, now no one's eating free fruit at the PCC right now.
Nope.
Not unless you bring
I did not bring my reusable cup to the coffee shop because no one told me not to. I was just like, it's probably not a good idea for me to bring something from my house into a place where other people are. So I left it at home and I got a disposable cup. And then I saw today, one of the coffee shops had a sign saying that they're suspending their bring your own cup promotion, because usually you get a discount also to do it. I do it A, for kosher reasons, and B, for convenience, and C, for the earth. But they're suspending it because it's just not to cross-contaminate either to me or from
me.
We're
all participating in this. We are. We're all as good Seattle folks trying to protect each other and trying to protect our elderly and people who have lung issues. God. We're really working hard as individuals here to do what we can with limited resources.
My daughter was like, I heard that kids aren't impacted. And I was like, but we're going to wash our hands anyway.
Yeah.
Because we know people who are elderly or infirm or who have immune issues, and we're just around strangers who we don't know what their status is.
Right.
And we should just be careful.
We're all 1 degree away from someone in chemo.
Literally.
Like one house away sometimes. And knowing that, like, my kid could have a play date with a kid whose mom is going to go visit her mother who's in chemo. Like, now that child can have limited play dates, or her mom can't visit her mother for a while. Right. Like, these are the situations we're in. So we plan to talk about apocalypse. We plan to talk about disease. We plan to talk about what happens in a world where things go crazy. And we did. I think that we ended up, so I think that we should, even though, Ishtadlis, like, what you try to do matters more, we should all daven to have enough focus to keep doing what we're doing and to keep the people around us safe, and to not say to yourself, like, oh, who cares? I'm over it already. Like,
I'm not going to get sick.
Well, yeah. Let's keep
There's definitely focus. Books where that's the attitude.
Yeah. Well, on that positive note, if you want to follow us on Instagram, we're at
Kiddish Book Club. Mm-hmm. And then you are?
I am Hoffman Jess, and on Twitter. Definitely message me there, or don't message me gross things. Definitely message me there or tweet me at Hoffman Jess.
And I'm Yonit DM everywhere.
She's everywhere. Well, not right now. Now she's just at home. For a while.
True. Everywhere online.
We're on partial quarantine.
Exactly.
And we're such I'm never on full.
That's right. That's right.
And for all of those who out there who might be on quarantine right now, who are burning through their podcast episodes, save your episodes for the Omer. It is coming.
Oh, it is coming.
Thank you for joining us at the Kiddish Book Club.
Good night. Malkeinu Moshiyeinu.